Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. I want to welcome you onto the planet. You know, it's life on Planet Porky. You'd be delighted to know a hat-trick performance here. That's three in a row from Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, thank you very much indeed for joining me again today at Planet Porky Towers. And I have to say again to all those people out there, thank you so much for all the responses we're getting to the shows and the way that we're, you know, building up an audience now seem to start appreciating,
really,
you know, both your intelligence, your glamour, your knowledge, and of course, my expertise.
The glamour, you see, is oozing down the microphone.
Well, it does. It does. You're absolutely right. It oozes down the microphone. Now, look, I'll tell you what I'm going to talk to you about, right? Well, talk about anything. We talked about coconuts, didn't we, in the last one? I got a terrific response.
Yeah, a lovely bunch.
People didn't. Are you going to buy that book?
I am going to buy Marcus Beckman's book about coconuts.
Yeah.
Because it's the kind of book I would have bought for actually various members of my family as a Christmas present.
Yes.
Because it's one of those books that's packed with loads of facts that are fascinating, that you don't really need to know, but really, really interesting.
And what was Marcus like, Marcus Beckman?
Nice guy.
Yeah.
Big into
it. Did you ever work with a guy called Valentine Lowe?
Yeah, not on the Daily Mail.
He was on the Standard, wasn't he? Evening Standard. Mm. Like that. He's still around.
When I first saw that byline,
yes,
before
and
I met him, I thought it was a woman.
And me. Yeah, everybody did. Anyway, look, now this is about men, women and all this kind of stuff, OK? Now, for years, I've been sort of against all male situations. I got invited to host a St. George's Day lunch about 10 years ago when I was doing the breakfast show on Talk Radio and all that kind of stuff. And these guys from Hastings got in touch and said, you know, just the sort of guy. And I'm a patriot. I like St. George's Day. And I said, well, you know, I don't finish until, in those days, I was doing the mid-morning show, 1 o'clock. And they said, no, that's fine. We'll have a car waiting outside the studios for you. We were in Hatfield, which is just around the corner from where we are now. And this Range Rover turned up, took me down to Hastings, took about an hour, so it wasn't bad, and they held up the lunch start till 2:30 for me, St. George's Day. When I walked in, my heart fell because I realised after a few seconds that this was an all-male do, and there was a level of aggression in the air because obviously they'd let these guys in at 12, so they'd already had, you know, lots to drink, but I walked in, got a huge round of applause, hey, Porky, and all this kind of stuff, you know. And then the idea was we'd have the lunch, and then the first thing off was a comedian, but he was so blue, it was revolting, you know what I mean? It's sort of jokes I can't bear, you know, anti-woman jokes, lavatorial jokes. I hated it, and I realised I shouldn't really be here, you know what I mean? I didn't want to be there. So then when I got up, they were all expecting, you know, the same sort of thing from me, you know, a great tirade against, you know, women, all lads together, you know, come on, you know, let's all do a lot of shagging. So I don't know what they expected, but I basically turned it around and started talking about Lord Nelson because it was St. George's Day, you know, and the value of our country and the fact that we were on the coast and there's the English Channel and that's what kept us free men and all that and that kind of stuff. Which they weren't very impressed about at all. You know what I mean? They wanted me to start telling them how evil women were and stories about, you know, well, things like, how many secretaries did you shag in Fleet Street, Porky, and all that kind of stuff, you know. So.
Oh, I would have slapped them all.
Yeah, so. But there wasn't another single woman in the room. So.
Apart from the waitresses, maybe.
Say?
Apart from the waitresses.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But
I think.
They don't count.
Well, well, they could only have felt very uncomfortable in that sort of atmosphere, believe
well, that's
me.
That's abuse of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. So, anyway. I got it over and done with and left, but it reinforced the prejudice I've had for many years before that. I've never been to a stag party. Now, the reason I'm telling you all this, because I know you have your own view on it, is that I read only this week that a group of professional ladies are getting together in London and forming a ladies' club. Now, there's lots of men-only clubs in London, you know, like the... I don't know what they're called, really, but they're...
Well, Elvino was an early figure, well, isn't he, as well?
Tell us the story. Go on.
So Elvino's a sort of famous Fleet Street watering hole. There's another branch, isn't there, on New Bridge Street?
No, there is, right next to Blackfriars Station.
So in the old days, only gentlemen could go into this place to have a drink or a meal, and ladies would only be allowed in if accompanied by a man. Which was a stupid rule.
Yeah, of course it was,
I used to just dismiss it and think, well, there's plenty of other places to go, frankly. Yep. Why do I want to go somewhere where they don't want me to be?
No.
But I don't understand this drive to establish female-only clubs in the vein of men-only clubs.
Well,
how boring is that? Who wants to be in an environment?
I don't want to be in an all-male environment.
No, nor me in an all-women one.
Yeah, I've got the information here. Behind a dark wood door on Maddox Street in Mayfair, do you know Maddox Street?
Yeah.
Is the second branch of the women-only club, the Albright. No, they called it the Albright.
Madeleine's connection, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. Madeleine Albright, and it says, and on Thursday last week, it was mine for the morning. This is a lady journalist who's gone there to taste it. Her name is Jack. Oh, no, it's a bloke, actually. Jack Mullen. So it's the first man.
Maybe he was in drag.
Yeah. The first bloke gone, Jack Mullen. Now, it's a very posh club and all this kind of stuff. It says its membership list in Britain includes actress Naomi Harris and Olivia Wilde, and the entrepreneurs Martha Lane Fox and Trini Woodall. The club, which has two bases in London, has an ambition for two more in New York and Washington, is among a range of women-only clubs that include The Wing, an American organisation that opened its first venue in London in September. Now, for years and years and years, women have complained about these all-male clubs. Garrick, is the Garrick an all-male club?
Not anymore. Garrick a few times.
Oh, have you? Yeah, OK.
I think females can join now.
Yeah, well, there are still some all-male clubs. Yeah.
What's the point?
Go, well, I don't know. I mean, is it so, you know, we can sit and have a cigar and talk about political affairs and all that kind of stuff? I have never been on a stag night because, for two reasons, firstly, you're not in control on a stag night in the sense that there's usually like 15 or 20 people and they say, come on, we'll have a kitty. And then somebody orders a round of drinks that take half an hour to get to you. And then if you make the mistake of going for a meal, it takes 3 hours to get served. Usually on a stag night, you don't know all the people because you're a mate of the person getting married, but he's got mates from other directions. So you might be a social mate, but somebody comes from work. You know what I mean?
Or family members
and all that.
How
and you,
boring.
You don't like them because they're boring bastards. You know what I mean?
You've got nothing in common.
Nothing in common.
And they want you to entertain them because you come from a glamorous industry.
Exactly, all of that. But the second reason was I decided at a very early age when I had my first girlfriend, if we do get married, I'm not going to have a stag night because, as far as I'm concerned, I'm giving my girlfriend, the woman I've chosen to spend the rest of my life with, the impression that it's going to be so bad, I need one last night to go out and get absolutely smashed out my face on drink and maybe pull a bird. You know what I mean?
I mean,
what do you think about hen nights?
I never go to them. I think they're dead boring. It involves women dressed up as cricket bats.
Cricket bats?
Sort of master classes in making penises out of plastic.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Why is that interesting? Why is that a sort of prelude to marriage?
Yes.
Is it all about sex and...
Well, the other thing
sort
is...
Sort of basest instincts? I just don't see
When you see these hen night people, they wear L plates. I mean, it's all so bloody antediluvian.
I went to Hamburg this year.
Yeah, right.
And Hamburg is sort of hen party central.
Yes.
You know, not stag parties, interestingly.
Yes.
But there's still a lot of sex clubs there.
It's still
a bit a throwback to Soho in the...
Would your visit to Hamburg have been anything to do with your research for your book?
Well, it was, yeah. I was there visiting Beatles and John Lennon sites. Yeah, it was fascinating.
Right,
But every street corner, sort of gaggles of girls in turquoise tutus and tottering around on ridiculous high heels.
Yes.
Vomiting on the pavement and staggering out of clubs where they've just seen blokes committing sex acts. I mean, how edifying.
Yeah, how horrible.
How edifying.
I totally agree. And it's all about, you know, we've got to be outrageous.
Why?
Exactly.
Why?
For instance, I've always thought about it this way. If I was going to get married and if my intended said she was going on a hen night, I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like it at all because, I mean, even if I trusted her, I knew her friends might try to get her into trouble and that kind of stuff.
The pressure is on to get up to no good, isn't it?
That's right, and all that
for
kind of stuff. But secondly, another reason why I wouldn't go on I certainly wouldn't have a stag night of my own is that I would be ashamed of my behaviour on that stag night. I know I would. Mm. You know, and the whole idea of deciding to get married is that you're going to give that...
Leave those times behind.
That's what I'm saying.
That was the younger, sillier me, but now I'm going to be serious and commit.
What I'm saying is there should be an alternative to a stag night, which is welcome to a relationship in the future night. You know what I mean?
Actually, that's what the wedding is. The wedding is a celebration of the life to come, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I suppose
I'm with you. I don't want to... But
the thing that amazes me, these are all very high-powered, high-class women. You know what I mean?
The one that baffles me is Trini.
Right.
Because...
Well, is she really an entrepreneur or is she just a bit of a celebrity?
She's built a business, a cosmetics business, called Trini London, on the money of her exceedingly wealthy boyfriend, Charles Sargent.
Right, okay.
So that's not very feminist, is it?
No,
really?
No. And you're absolutely right about Albright. You've got it in one. It says that the two founders of this club, who are Debbie Wasco and Anna Jones, were inspired by a quotation from Madeleine Albright. The funny thing is that the name of their club, Albright, is spelt differently to Albright, who is Madeleine Albright, who was the former US Secretary of State. But they said the quote that most inspired us was from Madeleine Albright, who said, "There is a special place in hell for women who don't help each other." Now, is that true?
A special place in hell, really?
Yeah.
I get the whole thing of us, our sorority, our sisterhood, all supporting each other.
Yeah.
I'm a big champion of women.
Yes.
I love women. I get great enjoyment out of my female family members, my female friends, my daughters. You know, let's hear it for the girls. But also, we wouldn't be here without the men. And I don't see the point of separating them. Surely the whole wealth of what makes the world go round is the fact that we bring different things to the table.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, celebrate the female side of things, but also honour and respect the male side of things. And it's the combination, the blend, that makes it all work.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But anyway, you know, it's each to their own. Now, because I love talking rock music with you, I've been watching a new series of documentaries on ABBA, right? One of my favourite ever groups.
What's your favourite ABBA song?
Without a shadow of a doubt, Dancing Queen.
It
has to be.
Yeah,
yeah, right?
Brilliant.
Now, that's interesting because Dancing Queen took 6 months to write. And, you know, two of the world's greatest songwriters, Bjorn and Benny, worked on it for 6 months because, I know nothing about music, but apparently the changing chords and the changing vocal range and the, you know, the...
It's quite a complex structure of a song. I get that. And also those two songwriters being the perfectionists they are. I mean, the lyric is quite simple.
Yes.
You know, and it lilts along.
Yes.
ABBA lyrics, although some of their themes were very dark and complex, the lyrics were always quite simple, which is the hallmark of somebody writing in a language that's not their first language.
You've just hit the nail on the head, I was about to say, because they weren't fluent in English. I mean, they spoke English perfectly, but they weren't fluent as in been brought up in it. They had to use very simple words to convey their message. So you know, things like, you know, Dancing Queen, only 17, she can dance, she can jive.
It's
you know,
impersonation. I'm loving it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I went through my ABBA period. But anyway, the Dancing Queen took 6 months to write because, I say, they simply couldn't put it together. But what I didn't realise was that the band nearly broke up because they had a manager called Stig. Somebody, Stig Anderson.
All Swedes are called Stig.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think his name is Stig Anderson.
All Koreans are called Kim, right?
Oh, Kim, that's right, yeah. And he was known as, like, you know, the fifth member of ABBA, just like Epstein was known as the fifth Beatle, or George Martin, the fifth Beatle.
Or Pete Best. There were many fifth Beatles.
Or, in fact, funny enough, only a week ago, the guy who took the album pictures of Help
and
Rubber Soul. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was known as the fifth Beatle. Mm. So there's a lot of fifth Beatles around, you know. And
there were about 55 Beatles, weren't there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah. But anyway, so they had worldwide success and they were on top of their game and, you know, the chart-topping albums and singles when Stig suddenly demanded, we've got to have another single. So So Bjorn and Benny said, no, we're working on a great song. And they used to write in a shed at the bottom of Benny's garden. You know, they all live on islands in in Sweden. You know, these
beautiful
little
place. Beautiful place.
No, I haven't. I've been to Denmark, but I've never been to Norway or Sweden. I've been to Denmark a few times because England play football there. I'd love to go to Norway. I'd love to go right north, you know, to...
We should go on one of those cruises, you know.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
The fjords.
It'd be utterly fantastic.
A rock cruise in the fjords.
Absolutely fantastic.
Planet Porky goes cruising.
That's right, Porky goes cruising, absolutely. You couldn't think of a better title, could you? But anyway, Stig said, and Bjorn and Benny said, no. And he said, no. You know, it's 3 months since we had a single. We've got to have another single out. And they refused to give him a decent song because they didn't want to go out. So he went into the archives and found Fernando. And the group very nearly split up because they thought it was crap. They'd written Fernando, apparently, years back. You see what I mean? When they, you know, like some of the Beatles songs written at the start, you know, don't hold water these days because they were still learning their craft, obviously, you know. And
production on that was amazing, though.
On what?
On Fernando. That little piccolo right at the beginning. Yeah. It's just so heartrending, wasn't
it? Yes, it is. But
all about the production.
But they didn't want a downer song. They wanted an upper song. You see what I mean? And that's what they're working on. Because Dancing Queen's one of the great upper songs of the history
of
music.
One of the great party tracks.
Exactly. You know,
that song on
you know,
party
you can dance, she can jive, having the time of her life. See that girl, watch that scene, dig it, the Dancing Queen. You know,
undoing the
And so they both said,
"Hairy chest." I never knew that.
Oh well,
quite nice. Yeah.
But don't talk too much about this, please. So you see what I mean. So they wanted this upper song. This song came out, and they thought, "God, that's so awful." So they had a big row, apparently, and all this kind of stuff. And then eventually, Dancing Queen comes out, and so that's got to be it. But having said that, go on.
Do you remember the song that shot them into the public eye? When they won Eurovision. Do you remember the song?
Yes, Waterloo.
There you go.
And Waterloo Station is about a mile from here, where we're recording at the moment. And
what always amazes me, though, is that's such a long time ago, and they had such a long career.
Yes.
And they haven't gone away, have they?
Well,
ABBA's cooler than ever, I would say.
They've gone away in the sense of, I mean, they've done it right. They stopped making great music after about 10 years, and now their music's legendary. I mean, that happens to all great groups. The same with the Rolling Stones, isn't it?
How much of that was, but how much of that was down to the stage musical, which became the films?
Well, you know what they've done lately? You'll have seen this.
It's a touring exhibition, isn't it?
Do you know what it is? The latest Mamma Mia is now an audience participation experience at the Hippodrome or something like that, where you're having dinner, but you become part of the show as the singers move around you and all that kind of stuff. You know, it sounds amazing, really.
I don't think it would be. I think if it were the genuine, real article and it were the original ABBA members, that would be interesting to me.
Yes.
But just to have tribute musicians doing that, nah.
Well, they can't. They can't perform at the level they did these days because they're all over 70 now, and that's for the obvious reasons. I mean, Agnetha to me was just the vision of
She was angelic. Wasn't
she was a goddess.
Perfect voice. But they had that Fleetwood Mac thing went down.
Yes, of course they did.
Because they had the sort of inter relationships that all broke down.
Well, I'm not sure they were inter. Simply, one was married to the other, and one was married to the other. I don't think they ever swapped over, did they?
Broke down. They were having affairs with other people.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
I remember. But Agnetha saying,
"Winner takes it all. The loser has a fall."
That's the finest pop song, probably of all time.
Really? Do you think so?
Definitely.
Well, I think with the video, when you see Agnetha's sorrowful face, you know, staring into the camera,
because it was real.
You know,
and he was exploiting her real heartache.
Yeah, he was.
And he was preventing her from taking their little children on the road with them, and she was deprived of her children.
Da 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 da.
That's heartbreaking.
Da 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 da. Yeah, they're fantastic words. But I suppose you're right. I suppose Waterloo, the original crashing piano noise,
great song.
Yeah,
great,
fantastic.
Production. Very simple.
And then the one that used to hit me and my mates at about 1:30 in the morning in the discos was SOS. And, we changed SOS into Save Our Supping because the night was coming to an end and they were starting to stop serving your drinks. And, you know, we'd stand at a bar, "When I near you, baby, can you hear me? SOS, Save Our Supping," you know.
It
wasn't very original.
The falsetto, it was always just a little bit high for us to sing along to, you know.
Was it? Well, apparently they
choose ABBA songs in karaoke.
Apparently they... Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That could be right. Apparently they've got one of the greatest vocal ranges any musician can ever have. And I tell you, I saw saying that, Stock Aitken and Waterman, who's the guy who likes the trains? Is that Pete Waterman?
Yeah,
that's right, yeah. Well, I saw him being interviewed, and he was interviewed about his trains, but at the same time talking about his career and all that. And he said, the vocal range of the singers in ABBA, both men and women, but mostly Agnetha and Anni-Frid, were, he said, so incredible they could switch from one to the other so quickly. That's what made ABBA songs what they are today.
Proper singers. I tell you who's amazing.
Yeah.
Who, if anyone hasn't seen Mamma Mia on stage
right.
in the West End,
yeah.
go see it right now because right. there's an extraordinary girl
yeah.
called Maz Murray
mm-hmm.
playing Donna
yeah.
in Mamma Mia. She's the daughter of Mitch Murray, the songwriter.
Yes.
Amazing family. And Gina Murray, the sister,
yeah.
She's also a fantastic singer and performer as well.
Yeah.
She, incidentally, read the audio book of my David Bowie biography.
Oh, here. Right. Yeah.
yeah. Wonderful, talented family. But Maz Murray,
yeah.
she belts it. And she's a real singer, proper singer.
OK, folks, this is Mike Porky Parry. And I'm delighted to be able to tell you that in association with Planet Porky, I can introduce you to Harry's. Harry's Grooming, Harry's Shaving Products. They are fantastic. And I have become a huge fan. Why I've become a huge fan? Well, because of the closeness, the smooth, comfortable glide that you feel on your face with that razor, okay? Foaming shave gel, absolutely wonderful. Believe me, frothy as you like. And most of all, I think, the textured grip of the razor. Feel that in your hand, believe me. It's absolutely terrific, okay? It's a brand new product, but it's making its mark all over the world, literally. Let me tell you the story of Harry. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with overpriced razors, as we all have been over the years, they started Harry's to try and fix shaving, okay? Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so guess what? They bought their own factory. That's the way to do it. If you want something done in this life, you've got to do it yourself. Now, by taking less profit, OK, Harry's offers great quality products at a very, very fair price, which I'm going to tell you about in a second, OK? Their amazing quality blades are almost half the price of the leading five-blade brand, OK? And the trial set, which you need to get associated with, folks, if you take my advice, includes everything you need for a close and comfortable shave. The weighted ergonomic handle, which I've already told you about, five precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Now, let me tell you about this exclusive offer, okay? I really want you to get into this and enjoy the benefits that I've had from Harry's. Support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, five-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover by going to harrys.com/porky right now. Let me repeat that, please. harrys.com/porky. Right, OK, folks. You are listening to Life on Planet Porky with Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann was once again giving us some tremendous insight into the world of rock and roll, being Fleet Street's, one of Fleet Street's most successful ever rock chicks. I tell you what I want to talk to you about, Leslie Ann, because you're an expert on many things in life. I came across a phenomenon which I read about, because I read lots of things all the time, as you know, and this woman's talking about a dangerous addiction, and her dangerous addiction is helping other people.
Oh, okay.
And
she was a girl guide, wasn't she?
Say again.
She was a girl guide.
Who?
Well, she's got
a girl guide. This lady's called Nicola Vivian,
mm-hmm.
And she's brought a book out, I get loads of books sent to me, and I find them fascinating. And this book's called My Will, A Portrait of Love and Addiction. And it's... I recognise so much of myself in this book that I don't know what it is. It must be some mental condition. But when you help other people and when you, you know, rescue other people, and you know, is it something that you do because of your goodness or because inside yourself it makes you feel
you're
very happy?
For you.
To feel like a hero,
yeah.
to feel I've done good, to feel like, you know, I can hold my head up high because I'm a good guy.
Absolutely. There's what do you think it is? Altruistic about it, is there?
I mean, well I don't know. I don't know.
If you're doing things for other people, helping others, making other people feel better about themselves,
yes,
literally helping them to do things,
yes,
you can only feel good about yourself
yeah.
because you have been selfless. You've put yourself aside and you've done something that makes the world the world a better place.
Sure.
So it's probably it works both ways.
Is it? I just feel uncomfortable if I don't help where I know I can. So, for instance, you know, and I can't work out why I do this, and lots of members of my family, my two sisters in particular, say don't do it because I give lots of money away.
No, I've told you about this before.
Well, I mean, I give some to charity and all that, but
your sisters are saying don't give it away because they want to inherit it, but bless their hearts.
Well, no,
but,
I mean,
I'm being
yeah, no, I know you are, but you're absolutely right.
But you should stop doing this.
Well, I you see,
I buy the big issue, you know, that's
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, sometimes I give the guy the money, but I don't want the paper, you know, because and although they have a cliquish sort of ability to attract do-gooder celebrities, don't they? You say, oh, I'll do it for nothing for the big issue, you know, at all. But anyway, look, what I was going to say is, so there was one mutual Fleet Street colleague of ours, fell on hard times, had, you know, mental stress problems.
Yeah, I remember this.
And I ended up going down to see her in Surrey because I, you know, wanted to help. I'd worked with her. And in a bad way, ended up in the Priory. Some of that was to do with the bullying of her bosses, you know, over the years we've talked about.
It wasn't your responsibility, Mike.
Well, anyway, I felt I want to help.
You were taking advantage of
them. Well, I wasn't taking advantage of because I did it voluntarily, but I paid for her to go away on holiday to, you know, try and get her right because she had a son, so I paid for her and her son to go on holiday. I gave her some money to help her with the bills because she was unable to work while she was so ill, you know. As I say, she went into the the Priory. And then we put a book together and we got an advance from John Blake, who is a mutual friend of ours. You know John, obviously.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't a huge advance, but I gave it all to my friend. In fact, it was 10,000, so it would have been £5,000 each. I was doing okay at the time. I was in a fortunate position. She wasn't. So I said, no, you take that. And then and we wrote the book sort of 50-50. I mostly came up with the... It was about Wayne Rooney, actually, called Rooney Tunes. Mm-hmm. And I came up with all the information and my colleague had time to write it, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I was very happy to give. Now, in other situations, I've helped people pay their tax bills at the end of the year. Again, journalists. I mean, I was very lucky to move into radio, which is quite a well-paid industry, as Fleet Street was going down. Some others couldn't find a lifeboat and they couldn't change to another career. And they did end up, you know, struggling like mad. And if you've had a successful year, it could be 8 months later when you've got to pay the tax bill for that year, you know. And they would ring me up and say, "And okay." And I would just write out a cheque, not huge amounts of money, but maybe 3,000 one year and 2,000 the next, to try and help them out and all that kind of stuff.
Did they pay it back?
No.
And then the friendship fell off the side. Right?
Well,
and you never saw them again.
It's a bit more complicated than that, in the sense that when I gave it, I didn't expect to get it back. But when, well, for one friend, I supported his daughter through university for 4 years, and again, it wasn't huge. I think it was £100 a month or something like that, you know. But that definitely helped her out because, you know, her parents couldn't, and you have to buy books and all that kind of stuff. And then I was dismayed about 18 months after she left university to hear from somebody else that she'd got married.
And they hadn't even invited her.
She was my goddaughter. And you know,
because people put their hard times behind them.
Yeah.
And you would be a tangible, visible reminder of when things were not so good.
Really?
It happens all the time. I've seen it so often.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very disappointing.
Yeah, very disappointing. And then other people, you know, I've helped out, and I'm not trying to make myself out to be a martyr. In fact, I wish on many occasions I hadn't done it, you know what I mean? Mm. But I feel so uncomfortable if I'm in a position to help and I don't. There was one guy once...
You're not really helping, by the way.
Well, you see, that's a good point. There was one guy once I worked with in radio in the early days. He was a young producer and he just didn't have money for something. He lived with his girlfriend. He couldn't pay the bills. I just gave him £500 out of my pocket. You know,
Well, they see you coming.
I think we'd been to the races the previous day, Al and I, and we'd come back with a load of cash. I just gave him £500, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of nothing. But, I mean,
Don't tell people where you live. They'll all be rude. Well, you have a queue when you go.
This is the kind of thing. I don't mind being generous to my family. In fact, I enjoy very much being generous to my family. I take my sisters away on the, you know, we go to Cornwall, you know, in September when it's not too busy. And a couple of years ago, we went to Chester, which is our hometown.
Is there a vacancy? I'll be your sister.
Yeah, well, whatever. Now, I don't mind all that because I spend time at their houses. You know, I stay with one of my sisters down in Bournemouth. I go around for, you know, great Sunday lunches to my other sister in Surrey and all that. I don't mind that. But I don't know what drives me all the time. I think I've said this to you before. I've never felt sorry for myself in life, but I feel sorry for other people.
Question. Do people do things for you?
No. No.
How do you feel about that?
I don't even think about it. I don't even examine.
You really don't lie there in bed sometimes and think, oh, I'm a mug here.
Nobody's ever given me any money, which I haven't earned. Nobody's ever really done me a favour at work in
do
the way.
Do people give you presents?
Well, yeah, like Christmas presents and things like that. But I mean, no, nobody's.
Do you feel hard done by?
No, I don't. No, no. Okay. I wouldn't know how to react if somebody.
So you take the moral high ground and you've got the upper hand?
No, I'm not taking the moral high ground. I wouldn't know how to react. If somebody did an act of kindness towards me, I wouldn't know how to react. And I'd feel embarrassed, quite simply.
It's a bit like, yeah. I think you feel the same as I do about this. Yeah. I quite like, not anymore so much, but I was a big party girl in my younger days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll still go to the odd party. I've always dared my kids to throw any kind of party for me, especially a surprise one.
Right.
Because I don't want to be the centre of attention at a party.
No.
But I'm quite happy to stand in the crowd at somebody else's.
Yes.
So maybe it's to do with attention, focal points.
Maybe it is.
Not wanting to be the recipient, but always wanting to be the giver-outer, in a way.
Maybe it is. But you see, for instance, if I read a story in a newspaper...
It's a psychiatrist's couch here, isn't it?
It is a psychiatrist's couch. If I read a story in a paper, or... If I see something on the news, and we had this conversation actually a few weeks ago, some poor lady was, you know, her mother was given some terrible drug when the lady was in the womb, and it was a bit like thalidomide, but it was a different one.
Yeah.
The poor lady went through her life with a disfigured face. Half of her side of her face was defigured. And when I saw the interview with her in which she said, and it really humbled me, she said, you know, because of the way I look, I've never had a relationship, therefore I've never had children, and I think I would have been a great mum and I've got great maternity. I felt so sorry for that poor woman. So why should I moan about anything that's gone wrong in my life when that poor woman's life was destroyed before she was even born? Can you imagine the sort of bullying she'd have gone through at school and this
terrible
sort of stuff?
My mum likes to say,
air conditioning.
She likes to say it's not so bad because there's always somebody worse off. And
yeah.
That actually doesn't make me feel better.
No.
I don't like to think of there being somebody worse
off. Yeah,
You know, we can't say it's all right for us because so-and-so down the road has got half a face or whatever.
Yes.
That's not really...
No, but I don't know why. I just feel so sorry for them. I mean, look, I've made mistakes. Undoubtedly, I've made mistakes which have affected my career. And, you know, my career could have... I've had a very good career and I'm proud of it, but it, you know, could have been other highs maybe.
Keep looking forward.
Oh yeah, of course I will. Yeah, that's not a problem
at
all. No regrets at all.
You did it your way.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, I think some of my friends have made such terrible mistakes. A mate of mine, a sports reporter, will have been well known to your dad actually, and you know what I'm talking about when I tell you about this incident, is in a wine bar in Bromley. And he's with his wife, and his wife has been out shopping, and she's come back, and she starts getting stuff out of a bag to show her husband, and some of it involves lingerie, okay? And
you'd get that out in a wine bar, wouldn't
well,
you?
Well, I don't know. I don't quite know the circumstances, you know?
Don't we wait for the boudoir to
Well, no, I think she was just telling him what she'd bought or something like that.
No.
Anyway.
Tacky.
Yeah, what happens is that... The guy I'm talking about thinks that two blokes on a table within their vision, made lewd comments, you know, or something like that. So he decided the better thing to do, instead of getting annoyed, was to leave. So they get up and they leave. And then he realises, you know, they'd left in such haste, 50 yards down the street, he's left his phone. He goes back and goes to the table where they were sitting. And the two guys are still there. He thinks they're sniggering at him, you know. And he then, in his head, he's had a few drinks, thinks, I bet they've got my phone. You know what I mean? So he goes over and confronts them and gets aggressive. And he admits he got aggressive. One of the guys gets up and, you know, stands up to him. My friend then leans over and bites him on the cheek, OK? Yeah, and found out that he hadn't taken the phone. He found the phone eventually. It was about his person. He hadn't left his phone there in the first place. But as a result of that, he went to jail for 14 months for assault, OK? And his career ended, obviously, overnight.
Threw his life away.
Yeah, threw his life away.
And that is just making an assumption.
And I said, how long did the incident take place? He said, about 12 seconds. Yeah. And I said, in 12 seconds, you destroyed your career. He said, yeah, I destroyed my life and my career.
Assumptions are the root of all cock-ups.
Yeah. You think
we,
so?
We would sometimes pause to think, actually, what I have assumed there is probably not the case.
Yes, but you want to assume it, don't you?
You have to take a deep breath and count to 10.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
And certainly not bite anybody.
No, no. Part of my problems have been...
Unless you want to bite somebody on the bum.
Well, absolutely.
It's going
to
be fun.
Things I've done wrong sometimes, I try to clear my conscience about my own self-loathing by saying, well, that wouldn't have happened if somebody hadn't done this to me or done that to me. And eventually I got so frustrated, I exploded. And I mean, that's no good. You've got to have total control over yourself, because your enemies will, you know, they'll find your weak spot, and your weak spot is that guy will explode if we push him far enough.
Yeah, of course they're going to find it. But yeah, there are no mitigating circumstances. We are responsible for our own behaviour.
Yes,
and
I totally agree.
And our own self-control.
I totally agree.
But you've got to move on from mistakes as well.
Oh, of course you have,
Don't beat yourself up.
My dad
did a lot of this at the end of his life.
He kept
bringing up stuff that...
But your dad didn't do much wrong, did he?
Well, he kept telling me little things that he'd said or done to his mother when he was much younger. And he'd always say this, I feel so ashamed. And I say, Dad...
Yeah, you are. But teenage boys have an awful time relationship with their mother, believe me. I did with mine, my nephew did with my sister. It's one of the most fractious relationships in life.
And raging hormones and all
that. That's right, absolutely.
It's a pile.
Absolutely. Listen, just before we go, I want to ask you one more thing, okay? Yeah. Have you ever ridden on a donkey on a beach?
I have.
Have you? Where?
In Westbrook, just beyond Margate in Kent, when I was a kid. But I was down in Margate last weekend, staying with my wonderful cousins.
Yeah.
And my cousin Candida and I did a walk from Westbrook all the way to the harbour of Margate, where the Tate is now.
Yeah.
The Turner Contemporary.
Yes, I know.
Tracy Emin's art gallery there.
Yeah.
And I said to her, do you remember where all this, you know, the stinky seaweed, the pile
absolutely,
seaweed?
Yeah.
Do you remember when we used to ride donkeys along here?
Yeah.
She said, oh my God, I so remember that.
Wasn't it fantastic?
It took us right back to our childhood. Well,
beaches were a big part of our childhood. I was born in Chester and we used to use the North Wales coast. Rhyl, Pethelly, Llandudno, Colwyn Bay.
Colwyn Bay is a remarkable place.
Absolutely.
It had a pier in those days.
Yes,
as well.
That's right, yeah. And I loved that smell of brine when the tide was out. You had to walk a mile across the sand, across rutted sand, you know, through rock pools and all that. And I loved all that. But the reason I ask is, tourists weighing more than 80 kilograms, that's 20.5 stone. So
that's a lot.
I'm afraid I'd go over that, 80 kilograms, Oh, I do. Are to be banned from donkey taxis in Mias Pueblo on the Costa del Sol and riding donkeys on the beach. This is the Donkey Protection Society. I personally think it's about time we scrap the idea of riding donkeys on the beach.
I know what you mean. I mean, it's not done in Margate anymore, so I'm assuming it's not really done in very many places in this country.
I doubt if they've got to be Blackpool anymore, have they?
And there are sanctuaries all over the place.
Yeah, there are, yeah.
Which makes me think of the famous Blackie the Donkey story.
Oh, absolutely.
With Hugh Whitto.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Yeah, it was Hugh Whitto and...
Didn't they put him in the stocks and we had to go and throw wet sponges at him?
Absolutely.
It was
kidnapped...
Somebody not...
Blackie the Donkey was going to be... Yeah, exactly. Was going to be thrown off the top of a building because it was a traditional ceremony in Spain.
That's right.
So two national newspapers went out there to kidnap the donkey and fought a battle over the donkey.
And paid a lot of money for the donkeys.
Don Mackay was the other guy, by the way.
That's
and Don was the one who bruised the law. Well, LAJ, thank you very much indeed. Great to have had you with me for this podcast and the previous two. Folks, you can get in touch with us anytime. The podcast, of course, is at Planet Porky. I'm at Mike Parry 8 on Twitter, and you are
at LAJ Writer.
That's right. And we have a Gmail address, and that is planetporkypod@gmail.com.
Yeah, I remembered it.
I got it right this time. Let's hear from you folks, because without you, there is no reason for us doing this. We love you all, and we'll be with you again very soon. I mean, Agnetha to me was just the vision of, you know...
She was angelic.
She was a goddess, you know.
Perfect voice. But they had that Fleetwood Mac thing went down.
Yes, of course they did.
Because they had the sort of inter-relationships that all broke down.
Well, I'm not sure they were inter. Simply, one was married to the other and one was married to the other. I don't think they ever swapped over, did they?
Then they broke down. They were having affairs with other people.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
I remember Agnetha saying...
Winner takes it all.
That's
the loser has a fall.
That finest pop song, yeah, probably of all time.
Really? Do you think so?
Definitely.
Well, I think with the video, when you see Agnetha's sorrowful face, you know, staring into the camera.
Because it was real.
You know.
And he was exploiting her real heartache.
Yeah, he was,
and
yeah.
And he was preventing her from taking their little children on the road with them. And she was deprived of her children.
Da, 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 da.
That's heartbreaking.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, they're fantastic words.
It's a beautiful place.
Beautiful place. No, I haven't. I've been to Denmark, but I've never been to Norway or Sweden. I've been to Denmark a few times because England play football there. I'd love to go to Norway. I'd love to go right north, you know, to...
We should go on one of those cruises. You know,
yeah, that'd be brilliant.
The fjords.
The fjords. It'd be utterly fantastic.
A rock cruise in the fjords.
Absolutely fantastic.
Planet Porky goes cruising.
That's right. Porky goes cruising, absolutely. You couldn't think of a better title, could you? And she starts getting stuff out of a bag to show her husband, and some of it involves lingerie, okay?